This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Quite an interesting topic to talk about here, Anello. Welcome.
Good morning to you and your listeners. Hello.
So, I mean, I've described it in layman's terms, but perhaps from a clinical point of view, can you tell us exactly what is under the dissociative identity disorder banner?
I think you have highlighted the most simplest way of defining dissociative identity disorder. One could say DID. I like to use layman's terms or to give a layman interpretation to disorders so that they can become accessible, especially when you think about language and context and cultural variations, because we don't come to full diagnosis without a full appreciation of how this DID would play out in different contexts and
yes.
in different spaces.
Yes.
So I like that which you've given. But for me, the simple thing that becomes a disorder, it is when it causes what we call a significant level of impairment.
Mm-hmm.
What do I mean by that? That your behavior, your emotion, and where you act has a degree that it affects the quality of life of you and those around you. And what do I mean by that? What does this presentation of this person who has this traumatic experience, right, play out in his or her day-to-day functioning, in his or her relationship, at work, and in their family life?
Mm.
When there's a disturbance, that the quality and the way of how that person behaves disrupts the functioning of those who are around them, then it causes something that warrants to be paid attention to.
Mm.
You mentioned something along the lines of when people commit crime under insanity or having a presentation, probably one was psychotic at that time or one is schizophrenic. When the court rules on making judgments, there's what we call forensic assessment, and there's a forensic process that gets done. And then the question becomes, does this person has the full capacity of understanding and appreciating the wrongfulness of what they've done? But because a psychologist and the psychiatrist and the team would have done an assessment, the court will then rule on that regard. But it sounds to me as though there's also a possibility of one who may not have gone through that other end of the spectrum.
Mm.
What do we do about that person?
Mm.
And I think that's what warrants our conversation today, to say a simple thing of someone who has a dissociative kind of identity disorder, not referred to now as because multiple personality is a common word that is, it's used mostly carelessly.
Mm.
Because people think that personality is more like a character. No. The reason why it was called multiple personalities is that the presentation of this person is fluid, right?
Mm.
But in this fluidity, there's abnormality
right.
in the way of how this person relates or interprets or under, kind of acts around other people. One of the things that usually is a presentation of DID, if one is in a trance,
mm-hmm.
would we say that person is insane? No. But from a clinical perspective, it does make sense as to how it would be deemed as clinical, because the presentation is abnormal. Part of what I do is that I'm a traditional healer in training, Isangoma in training. When I go into states of trance, it's a different presentation. Because
okay.
that, in that context, when I get provoked, the Vuga Idlos or the ancestor, whoever,
yeah.
wants to give me with a message, I can't receive that message in my human state.
Right.
So there has to be a spiritual provocation that happens for me to embody this person who tries to give me this message.
Mm.
But the difference with this message, there is no harm in it.
Mm.
There's no trigger of trauma, but it is a trance state, which is a spiritual consciousness that transcends my normality. And even to the degree that my state of consciousness, I can still recall some parts of what I was shown when I was in that state of trance. compared to when it's trans that is clinical.
So hang on, is there a lot of then misdiagnosis because of what you're explaining?
Definitely, there would be, because DID, it's also, there's an element of a medical condition in it. Doctors can give a better understanding in terms of that. But when you use the same DSM as doctors, that is the book that we use, I call it the Bible of psychiatry or medicine or psychology, we look for a certain number of traits, behaviors, emotions, and the process, how long does this prolong, right? Mm. Because you can't give a diagnosis of a disorder over probably 2 days or 3 days.
Right.
There has to be a pattern.
There has
to be a significant impairment of what this trauma, it could have been abuse, it could have been rape, but how does this rape now become a defense mechanism when one has not dealt with that?
Mm-hmm.
So it needs later the presentation that this person would act in ways that are abnormal. Some people will say, I have an out-of-body experience, right? Where I'm going with your question, an out-of-body experience usually at times, it's a presentation that you would find in people who are psychotic, some people who look with the DID, and sometimes you'll find it in people like me and the rest who are in a spiritual kind of level of consciousness, right? So what you would then realize is that this person is acting in weird ways that are not normal. But how do we judge normality? We judge normality on the basis of the criteria we use as medical doctors and all of that.
So hang on, Anele, how abnormal is abnormal? So say a person who's ordinarily quite mild-tempered suddenly has a flare and starts swearing at everybody. Is that enough to warrant a little bit of curiosity about whether this might be a dissociative moment?
We must understand that there must be a pattern,
yes.
Right? And the duration of how long that pattern has been. As I've explained, that there's a criteria, there's a way, there must be a thread of this presentation.
But does it have to be so extreme that you are violent, for example, or can it be less extreme?
For me, it varies in a continuum. There can be from low, mild, or average to the worst case scenario.
Sure,
but
right.
In cases that land with clinical psychologists, for an example, and psychiatrists, it's the other end of the continuum when there is danger to self, danger to others, impairment that it affects your quality of work, it affects your relationship, it affects other things that are part of your life.
Mm.
But then again, the presentation, we must be able to note how do these things happen over time, right? Because you can't just give a diagnosis on the basis of a day or so, but there must be this thing that everyone around this person can say, this warrants a clinical intervention.
Yeah.
Then just one thing that I want to highlight again, that these presentations can be context specific. So if one is having an out-of-body experience, as example, is uvukelidlozi or is in a trance moment, that out-of-body experience, it's warranted in that context because it's normal. No one in his or her consciousness or in her normal state would relay spiritual messages in a form of you being human. There has to be a transcendence that takes this person from flesh to the spirit. And in that context, it's contextually relevant. So misdiagnosis, for someone, for instance, who is like me, who has been through medical doctors, psychiatrists, but there was no understanding, why does this temporal lobe epilepsy present this way? I was also told I've got symptoms of DID, because I was in a trance state when I was unaware of it. I would say things that are not normal, what other people would say. But that presentation did not warrant psychiatry and neurology. It warranted that I see a traditional healer who would be able to normalize, contextualize, and give them an appropriate diagnosis, which eventually led to Uktuasa. And those state of consciousness and everything, when I have got a trance now, it's no longer interpreted as I've got an out-of-body experience that is abnormal or that warrants admission.
So that temporal lobe epilepsy, because we've heard that before, is that the same as dissociative identity disorder? Is it in the same kind of grouping of things that can happen to one's brain?
Not entirely, but I would say it can be a dual diagnosis, right? A comorbid diagnosis. What you see with temporal lobe epilepsy is a presentation of an epilepsy that is absent, that one is not aware of it when it happens, right? So you can be danger to yourself. So it affects the left side of the brain, a particular side of the brain physiology, right? And then in that way, as much as one would have fits that we'll see, that is epilepsy in a particular kind of a brain, right? But its manifestations are through physical fitting and everything that we see. But in this one, for me as an example, I would fall asleep, I would be temperamental, I would be irritable, I would be angry, but it's very short-lived, right? Whereas with dissociative disorder, it could be a medical condition, that it's psychological, but with epilepsy, it's a neurological diagnosis. So they fall into categories, but the presentation could be quite similar, because I can look like I have a dissociative moment when I have an epileptic seizure that I'm not aware of.
Sure, that is fascinating. We're speaking to clinical psychologist Anele Siswana about Dissociative Identity Disorder Awareness Day in the African context. Let's be real. This is really what you are in such a privileged position to be able to understand from the psychologist hat that you wear, as well as from the African spiritualist hat that you wear. The lines are open on 0861-987-000. You can get in touch.
Anele, in clinical psychology, is there ever a moment where there is sort of a group diagnosis? I mean, you know, in science, they would take an experiment and so forth and maybe study this group of monkeys or a group of whatever to understand a certain pattern of behavior, to understand their innate behavior, so to speak. Do we see this with human beings? Because when you look at our past, we are very abnormal. The rape, the murder, the violence, all of this. Is it possible that South Africa is suffering from, and I know this by a long shot, from a dissociative identity disorder? Because first of all, there is trauma. If trauma is the precursor of DID, we come from a very hectic trauma that was never addressed.
I don't, from what you're saying, I'm tempted to say you are coming from a social construction perspective, that a mental disorder or a mental illness can be socially constructed as a reality that exists for those people. That is from a social perspective.
Sure.
But from a clinical perspective, you can say and argue that for us to even have diagnosis or disorders, the reason why I've got a DSM is a kind of a standardized manual that is used globally to understand what depression looks like. Today we're talking about DID. What does that look like? It has been proven on a number of populations that when this presentation looks like this, it could be this, but not from the point of an experimental design kind of a thing, wanting to prove causalities and all of that. So we can't use the blanket statement. Probably before, the theorists, the Pavlovs and everybody else, the fathers of psychology, could use that with animals. However, with humans, it's different. And now when you look at the complexity of our social construct as South Africa, it's very difficult to come with that argument that is very scientific in its way. Hence, for me, I'm for the idea that at some point, psychological disorders are a manifestation of a social construct.
Sure.
As you say, our social construct is deeply laden in trauma. It's deeply laden in domestic violence and GBV. So those are the dominant narratives that we know, and those narratives are socially constructed as a result of all of these things that are compounded, that with unemployment, with COVID and everything else. So I'm very careful now as a clinical psychologist in private practice to give diagnosis. I can think about a diagnosis as a way of, what am I working with? And understand there are other factors, right? Like medical aid, what that means, ICD-10 code, your diagnosis and all of that. But the presentation of that in the room, you realize, yes, I'm working with DID, but there are other possible factors that are contributing to this current presentation of this person. So am I fair to give this diagnosis and use it as a matter of one size and fit all? Definitely no. Especially when those things that we do have now, with everything that we're going through in South Africa, there's no way that a single diagnosis can explain, or rather I can say, we are probably manifesting or presenting with these residual aspects of trauma that in our day-to-day life, we don't have the language and the tools of how to understand how trauma looks like, how to understand that now am I projecting, to what extent am I projecting my own adult issues when I have to help someone, when I'm dealing with rape, when I'm dealing with my partner who has been raped, but I don't know the language of how to deal with that.
Right.
What are some of those things that I am unaware of that in turn influence the way in which I interact with people from a social perspective, from a communal perspective, and from a feminine perspective?
Well, that's so it. I think what we're going to do is we're going to have a trauma series.
Yeah.
I think that's what we need to do, right? We and if you don't mind, you can invite your associates, Anele, but we'd like you on board to discuss this with us as the weeks go on. Anele Siswana, clinical psychologist with a focus today on dissociative identity disorder, as it is the Awareness Day, but so much more to be had by us in that conversation.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.